Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Dr. Lara Greaves. Kia ora, how are you, Lara?
Well, Anna, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good. It's very great to have you on the show 2 weeks in a row, which means we can kind of get stuck into one of the topics that we touched base on a little bit last week, which is David Seymour and the rise of ACT. I did want to get your thoughts around this a little bit, because in the last week we've seen ACT come forward with some more policy suggestions, ideas of what they'd be doing if they were in government. And I wanted to sort of pick your brains a wee bit about where you think the ACT party is at the moment. What's going on with their message and their popularity? What do you see it as at the moment?
Look, I think a lot of people dislike David Seymour, but I think they have to give it to him that he is a great politician. We saw that through the End of Life Choice Act. We've seen it, him getting in front of a few other political issues like the four-year term recently as well. And we've kind of seen it in his selection of candidates. So we're all kind of expecting, similar to United Future in sort of 2002 when they got this huge number of MPs, we were expecting that there'd be some kind of scandal with these new ACT MPs. Kind of that whole thing around who would put themselves on the ACT party list, when they only had one MP. So that was kind of that rationale behind that prediction. But we've seen none of them kind of have many issues at all. There was like the odd comment, I think, by Chris Bailey around denying climate change early on, but the rest of them seem to be quite good, steady performers, and they're getting out there. So like Nicole McKee was on News Hub Nation over the weekend. They gave her a 5-minute pitch and she was like in line with her ideology and their ideology, very reasonable and well presented. We've seen Brooke Van Vaughan be very similar as well. So he's got David Seymour is a good politician. I mean, Dancing with the Stars spoke to that as well. He got a huge public profile. He's currently doing a sort of tour of all of the small towns and taking selfies and gumboots with different people and landmarks. And he's just kind of quite good at all of this. Mm. And I think we kind of have to give kudos to him. That being said, in the cycle of major parties, we always start to think of one of the minor parties as becoming the new major party.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think back to when Labour was weak last time, people turn around and say, oh, well, the Green Party is the new Labour Party. And that often doesn't end up happening. It just ends up being part of that cycle of political parties and that cycle of the major party, in this case National, needing to reinvent and renew. And potentially we might see an increase in the party votes act this next election, but not in later years when National kind of get their act together.
So I think traditionally people have, as you kind of touched on there, thought about the ACT party as being sort of synonymous with David Seymour himself. And now we're starting to see more about the other people in the party and they're starting to have their own platform. What do you think we can expect moving forward? Because we are seeing some policy suggestions this week from what they would like to do if they were in government. What do you take away from some of these, headlines that we've seen around ACT this week? Is there anything in there that you think is interesting or concerning or is going to set a precedent for how they move forward into the future?
I think most of it seems to be aligned with their general ideology and how we would see them now. I mean, they did go through a phase of being sort of more of a right-leaning, but right-wing economically, but more socially liberal party. It's not really clear necessarily where they sit on that now. Of course, they're kind of championing their view of freedom of speech and hate speech. But I think generally they are kind of pivoting towards, like from what I can see, two groups of voters. They've been trying to capture that sort of what we would call more populist voter and some of their sort of anti-Māori rhetoric. And we have to remember that David Seymour's got Māori whakapapa and so do two of his MPs. And so they've kind of been trying to grab that territory. And I think that's been interesting because, of course, we've seen Judith Collins and National try to have policies in that space.
Mm.
But I think ACT is doing this interesting thing where they're suddenly going and trying to, like I was mentioning with that rural tour, move towards the farmers. And we saw this
right
around the gun legislation as well. And that's a really interesting move because actually a lot of us in political science have been having discussions about where the farmers are going. There's two groups that it's interesting to see that are generally right-leaning, where they would go. And that's one is the Christians, and the other group would be the farmers, if we can categorise people quite simply. But the farmers don't necessarily, it's hard to see how they would, like Todd Muller was potentially someone that they could connect to, being from Bay of Plenty and having that history and sort of kiwi fruit industry.
Mm.
But you can't necessarily see that in National, and I would say in this next generation of leaders of National are more like potentially the Nicola Willises, the Chris Bishops, the people we would call more urban liberals.
Mm.
So I think going after the farmers is quite a a smart move on behalf of David Seymour.
It would be really interesting to watch how that unfolds. Let's talk a little bit about COVID now. It's unavoidable still. And, of course, we now have at least a two-month pause on the travel bubble between Aotearoa and Australia. That is quarantine-free travel. People can still get home. People can still come over, but you'll have to do the 2 weeks in MIQ. Now, this has been pretty well received publicly. People seem to be on board with it, especially seeing what's happening in New South Wales at the moment. How do you feel this matches up with what we've seen from the government's COVID rollout, you know, since the start of the pandemic? Is this the next step in the pattern? Does it seem to make sense to you?
This was a really sensible move. I think really putting that certainty of at least 8 weeks for people was quite a good move, because it does mean that people kind of know not to travel within that certain time period, and they can change their plan. And people slightly outside of that time period can kind of figure out that they might not be going on that trip. But people have that certainty. And I know there's been a little bit of sort of question marks on people around some of those rules of people coming in these next week or two. Mm. But I can see the need for them to balance Kiwis being stuck and various families being separated and all of that with the need of safety and security around COVID. So I think generally this has been pretty well communicated. When we look to sort of surveys around COVID, at the moment there's not like a huge amount of high quality polling happening. There have been a few surveys like Sticky Beak and a few other online panel type surveys, which we generally don't think of as super high quality, because they're the people who go, oh yeah, I'm going to do a survey, like those kind of people. They're substantially different from actually a lot of people. I was going to say normal people, but I'm somebody who does the surveys. So that's that thing, is it's kind of hard to get our estimates, but all of those polls, all of those sort of lower quality polls are showing that people are generally in agreement with the government's approach and generally don't think life's going to go back to normal post-COVID. So people seem to still be on board.
Now, the second part of that conversation is, of course, the vaccination rollout. And there's been quite a bit of criticism, particularly around this first mass vaccination event that we're seeing in South Auckland this weekend. Initially, a very low take-up of the invitation to come to this event. We've seen an increase in that now, but there has still been quite a bit of criticism about how that has been rolled out. It's been targeting Pacifica and Māori communities, ostensibly in that area in South Auckland, but we're seeing reports from people who have been who are in that demographic but live in Central Auckland or on Waiheke Island and have been put in that catchment area. We've also seen Efeso Collins, Auckland City Councillor, criticising it, talking about ivory towers, people talking down to those communities and it not necessarily translating very well. What's your thoughts around this? How's the messaging been in your mind?
You know what I would do in this whole situation is get some of our really awesome, like, Pacifica researchers, fund them and get them to go out and actually ask Pacific and to some extent Māori as well, people, why they haven't been vaccinated or, like, what are the barriers? And I think actually we would have a really good chance of guessing that based on current research. And I think necessarily this huge event, like, is it clear who's asked for it? What do communities actually need and want, and what are the barriers? I think at the moment it's not really, it's kind of clear because we can kind of guess from all of this research over all of the years on all of the other vaccines. Mm. But, like, what are the actual barriers to people getting vaccinated? Is it, like, the time off work? Is it that it needs to come to them? Is it, you know, is it, misinformation, disinformation? What exactly is it? And I don't, like, I think those mass vaccination events, you know, tend to be probably, you know, still thousands of people will get vaccinated through it, but it's just really like what are the, for those so-called vulnerable or so-called priority groups, what are the actual barriers there? And I think that that's quite important to do, rather than to just do an online poll of 100 Pacifica and call it a day, which is what people have been doing.
Yeah, definitely needs more research into that one. Our last topic is a big one, but we haven't got a lot of time to talk about it. The abuse in state care inquiry is ongoing at the moment, and the revelations that are coming out in the news are pretty shocking and I think quite traumatising or re-traumatising for a lot of people. What do you, I guess, feel about seeing these stories coming out in the news? A lot of people aren't surprised or shocked, but it is definitely underlining that we've got this massive problem in our state care system historically and also perhaps at the moment as well. What do you think we're going to see come out of the other side of this inquiry?
Well, I think the sort of overall goals of the inquiry tend to be like recommendations for this not happening again. I would hope that a lot of the services have moved past this, but again, we still anecdotally and in the media hear of horrible situations for young people in care and in state. So I think that that's, you know, for the various Oranga Tamariki related scandals. So I think that that's potentially helpful. And I think that ultimately it looks like people airing these experiences has been informative to a lot of the general public. So I think a lot of what we do is trying to sort of in that politics there and around big issues is try to get like sort of what we would call middle New Zealand to understand the sort of depth and the pain of that. And I do agree that it would be re-traumatising for some people, but for some people also a really good opportunity to have the government and have society and the media listen and hear your story when your story's actually been suppressed for a long time. So I think definitely super complicated topic. I think it's been really interesting listening to them. And there was a friend and colleague of mine, Dr. Sam Manuela, gave evidence around cultural identity and the impact of isolation from cultural identity for Pacifica, which I thought was really, really interesting and another thing that's been taken from a lot of these people. It's just a really, really, I think, deep, meaningful, ultimately quite awful but potentially productive process.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always awesome to have you on the show. Looking forward to chatting to you again in a couple of weeks. Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Dr.